Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined in the studio today by Stevie Nicol. And after another break, Shaka Hislop returns with us. A lot of people moaning about a lot of different things we'll be discussing later on. Nottingham Forest, of course, not happy with the calls and their defeat against Everton. Plus, Mark Ogden here to bring the sunshine, the optimism around Manchester United at the moment. But we'll kick things off with El Clasico, of course, of Real Madrid coming from behind to win by 3-2 to all but seal the deal. They're 11 points clear at the top of the table with six games to play. Now, it's very different reflections on the game depending on which part of Spain you lived in. If you live in Madrid, for example, it's all good. It's champions. Real Madrid are great. However, in Catalonia, it's all about the ghost goal. Did that ball cross the line? In case you missed it, here it all is with Macron Darkey.
Picked up by Gundogan, nearly. Great save on the line by Lunin. That nearly just crept in.
What a save it was. Comes off Lamine Yamal. You can't really save it, so all the ball is over the line. Flick, near post.
Is that over the line?
It certainly looked like
that. That is an argument whether that actually has gone in. The whole of the ball, remember, has to cross the whole of the line. Ooh, no goal. VAR say no goal.
This has not gone down well in Barcelona. In fact, Joan Laporta, the Barca president, came out and gave a lengthy statement which included this. If it's confirmed that it was a legal goal, we will move ahead and request that the game be replayed. Of course you will. Mario Melchior joins us, but let's start, shall we, with Alex, who's with us from Spain. Have we got Alex? No, we don't have Alex. All right, OK. We'll try and get that sorted. Although, to be fair, I bet if it was the other way around, Real Madrid would be exactly the same. I think it's kind of that tit for tat that we're seeing at the moment with everyone having to go at officials.
I mean, it's easy to surmise that, given just how those relationships go in Spanish football and the two clubs that are involved. No question, it goes against you. There's a conspiracy about it all. It goes for you, in this case for Madrid. That's part of the game. It's kind of what we signed up for. And now, to start the season, everybody knew that La Liga did not have goal line technology. Mm-hmm. That's not been in dispute. Exactly why, we can sit here and question.
Money, Shaka, that's why.
Well, again, we can sit here and question.
Well, no, it's money.
Well, that's why. But if you're a Spanish club, you're a part of these decisions, or you can do something to address it at the start of the season. You don't wait until, the 32nd game of the season to then think, oh, hold on a minute, we need to do something about this. We'll happily pay for it at this point. Listen, I get everybody who supports Barcelona. I get why they're upset about it all. I get the reaction from Juan Laporta. Truth is, nothing's going to happen as a result. It's all semantics. It's all playing for a fan base. I get. You're Barcelona president. You play for the fan base. But nothing's going to happen from it. For what it's worth, looking at this real time, my initial reaction was that crossed the line. But as you see the replays, nothing is conclusive.
Nothing's definitive.
And I'll echo everything that was said right here in this studio yesterday. While I felt it crossed the line, if you don't have that conclusive look at it, that conclusive angle, the ruling on the field has to stand. That cannot be changed. From the time you start tinkering with that, then we're opening up a can of wounds that I don't think anybody in football wants. From the time we start suggesting or making it a real possibility that the game will be replayed as a result, we are opening up a can of worms that nobody in football anywhere wants.
And of course,
out of his statement, if it's confirmed, how's that going to happen?
Well, Stevie, I think you're going to run the technology, look at the angles, do the math, and sort it out. Obviously, Shaka makes a great point. You're playing to the fan base. Yeah, look, we're going to do something about this. Do the players? How much are the players bothered by it?
I think had Barcelona been closer to Real Madrid, I think the players would look at it in a different light. The players probably knew before this game kicked off that even if they won the game, the league's probably done, if not done. So the players are probably going to be the group that really doesn't say too much about the decision. They'll probably be thinking about, why don't we have this? I mean, you saw Gundogan in the clip. Gundogan goes to the referee and starts doing this.
Yeah.
So he's obviously used to it in the Premier League.
Yes.
He just doesn't know. So, yeah, what they'll be thinking about is, OK, we need to get this. That's what they'll be thinking.
And it's no guarantee that Barcelona go on and win the game if it's given. They were 2-1 up and they lost 3-2. So
yeah, listen, no guarantee at all. This changes everything. Well, nothing in that regard. But to your question about the players and their reactions, I think, in the most part, the players understand that this is a part of the game. Or certainly, in their experience, we've all experienced it at one level or another. And why I say the most part, because you have Lamine Yamal, you have Kobasi on the park, all they know is VAR and referring to somebody in a faraway office somewhere. But for just about every other player who's out there, we've been there.
Right.
Where decisions you have gone both for you and against you, and you accept it as a part of the game, and you figure out your way around that. You figure out what comes next, as opposed to kind of living in that single moment as though it were all-defining about the game.
Mario, is that fair? You're not knocking at the door at Joanne Laporta saying, we need something done, we need a replay of this game, it's not fair.
I mean, look. I understand what they, you know, like referring to. But when it comes down, the only thing I say in Spain now, the game has been so highly watched and highly focused on. Come on, guys, goal line technology should be a normality. Mm-hmm. That's all I gotta say. That's for everybody, because you know I hear people talking about it, and I understand the dispute in the game because it was a great game to watch. And I think, you know, for the outsiders, okay, if you're Barcelona fan, probably not, because you see the outcome. But away from that, you know, you could see Barca had the opportunity, but they had a great game in the, you know, a big game in the Champions League. Real Madrid had it. But the way Real played was first half, what they played during the week in the Champions League, and they played the second half against Barcelona. The same tactic, the same way, set down, the way they set up, played them on the break. And now we're talking about goal line technology. Mm-hmm. Hey, 90 minutes, you understand? It shouldn't even gone that far. It should have been won by either one of the teams.
Alex is now with us. Alex, this is exhausting, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it really is. And I think this from Laporta is a pretty transparent attempt at a deflection, really, and frankly, a little bit ridiculous. Look at what Laporta is saying. You know, he's saying, if it can be proven that this goal was legal. Well, the whole point is, it can't be proven. If it could be proven, there'd be no problem. It wouldn't be an issue. You know, Laporta's talking about, let's have a look at the audio and the video of the incident. Well, the audio was released today by the Federation for everybody to listen to, not just to Barca. It's out there on social media. It's quite funny actually watching the clip of the incident itself, because you see some of these players who are used to playing in the Premier League, other leagues that have goal line tech, going up to the referee, pointing at their wrists and saying, did your watch vibrate? And the ref's kind of like, well, there is no watch. There is no goal line tech. And then the video, it doesn't matter how many angles you look at it from. You can look at it for all the angles that we've got. None of them are definitive. At the end of the day, that's the problem. The best that anyone can do is look at the footage and surmise or suspect or make an educated guess. That's what we're asking the officials to do right now in Spain with no goal line tech. It's not the ref's fault. It's not the VAR's fault. They're doing their best with the situation that they've got. But the problem is there's no goal line technology. And this is a decision of La Liga. And it's a decision of the clubs as well, because we say it's La Liga's decision. Of course, La Liga's just made up of the clubs. The clubs have voted on this, and the clubs have decided, largely it seems for financial reasons, they didn't want to implement goal line technology. And like the guys say, with all the money in the game, with all the technology that we've got, with everything, you know, everything riding on this game, a game of this magnitude, El Clasico, how can it be that we don't have this tool at our disposal? Now, the other thing is, of course, this isn't the first incident we've had like this. This has happened in other games. But not in El Clasico. And now that it's happened in El Clasico, will that make a difference? And will finally we see this brought in out of sheer embarrassment, I guess, that this is happening, you know, in the biggest fixture in world football?
Let's talk football, shall we, Mario? Not a good couple of days for João Cancelo, of course. At fault for the Dembele goal in the PSG game, and, of course, at fault for the Lucas Vazquez goal as well in El Clasico. Just take me through how such an accomplished player playing in these games can make such big mistakes, which are pretty much the same as each other?
It's the decision making, right? You know, like, you know, one he had already the first half, and this one, I don't think his focus is, you're like, you know what they call in England, they say ball watching, and he's being caught by ball watching. You see, he's focused on the ball and forgetting the player behind him. Look, that is the danger part. The moment when he sees him coming, Fasquet, he knows he's late. He cannot do anything. Even, you know, the goalkeeper, you know, Sanzega said to him, like, they had a rally together, and you could see that. And normally, you know, when moments like that, I mean, I'm sure Saka can tell us, when moments like that, we go at the goalkeeper, but it's not like, you know, the goalkeeper is right. But at that moment, you don't always want to give it because the stake of the game is that high. So that was happening. But clearly, ball watching, he should have known the player is there, especially in a game that is intense like this. You cannot let this happen to you. And it happened again before that. So he knew he had a warning already against PSG, and now he get it again.
Is it naive of me to say, Stevie, if I'm playing and I've made that mistake against PSG, I am 100% focused that I'm not going to make that same mistake again?
That would be a very logical conclusion.
So how come... Why?
Well, because he doesn't have a defender's instinct. You know, you do things as a defender that you're not even thinking about it. It becomes an instinct.
Right.
And so when that ball's getting set up to be played, he should be looking around to see what's around him. And that sounds like common sense, but it's just an instinct. And you actually do it without having to think about it. Because that's part of your job.
Right.
He doesn't have that in his locker. And if you've coached football players, you can. There's two different types. There's players that you can tell something to and it's straight in there. But you can talk to some players and tell them over and over and over again and they don't get it. And clearly, for this to happen so quickly in the two games in the space of a week, not even a week, he doesn't get it defensively. Going forward in the penalty box, he gets it.
Yep.
Defensively, doesn't have the instinct.
So surely Xavi should know that, shouldn't he?
Well, I think I said it yesterday. You know, when you're in Xavi's position, you understand that you're going to lose something if you play Cancelo at fullback.
Right.
But you're going to gain going forward. And so you're kind of gambling. You're kind of playing the percentages that you might get away with it. And you've also got his teammates who you hope will make up for him. But when they don't make up for him and it comes into a position where he has to deal with it and he can't, then you pay the price.
There's a couple of things here for me. One, given his performance against PSG, I expect Ter Stegen to be on him, to make sure that João Cancelo knows everything that's around him.
So what do you mean on him? What is a goalkeeper should
just make sure
you, be doing?
There's a man over your right shoulder.
Right.
So, something. There's a man coming blindside. Yeah. And given their exchange, I think he has said it.
Right.
But João Cancelo is just totally oblivious to what's being said to him. Just given the exchange between Ter Stegen and João Cancelo after the goal goes in, that was just kind of my instinct around it. That João Cancelo, and to Steve's point, it's not just about the defensive instinct and looking around as the ball is crossed, but just know where who's around you. And the amazing thing to double down on the lack of defensive instinct of João Cancelo. When that ball beats him, he doesn't retreat towards the goal. He starts to overlap. He's thinking about attacking. That is the most amazing thing I have seen. He has zero idea.
And he's looking around. The thing is, after the goal goes in the back of the net, he's looking around as if to say,
where did he come from?
Exactly.
Where did he come from? But
yeah.
Where were you? Where were you? He's like, His whole body position, the way he's like got his hands gone, he's taken no responsibility for it at all.
The angle of the run had me laughing.
Yeah, but it's
He's on the overlap here. Yeah. He is. I mean, it is absolutely ridiculous. I mean, and to Stevie's point, well, there's a lot you can you know, and we talk about and you excuse. Camavinga as a left back or right. Tchouaméni as a centre back, that they don't have that instinct. I think this goes way further than that. This is just basic football. Yeah. Wherever you are in the park, look around and know where people are. This is basic.
So a bad week for Cancelo and obviously a bad week for Xavi. But what's interesting, Alex, is that we thought, right, out the Champions League. Real Madrid are champions now. That's it. He'll walk out the door at the end of the season, as he promised, of course, after that Villarreal defeat. However, reports are suggesting that on Wednesday he's meeting with Laporta, and Laporta's trying to persuade him to stay. How much is this a financial decision, or how much is this a footballing decision?
Yeah, we have been saying, haven't we, let's see how it goes between now and the end of the season. Well, like you say, now we know they're not going to win La Liga, 11 points behind Madrid. They're out of the Champions League. Yes, they have improved since Xavi announced that he was going, but the end result is that. I think a lot of it comes down to finances. A lot of it comes down to looking around and saying, well, what are the options? What are the alternatives? What can we do here? Can we bring in a coach who's better than Xavi and is going to transform the team? There's lots of talk about Rafa Márquez, the former Barcelona player, that the B team coach is taking over as Xavi. Is that really an improvement? I don't know. You know, he might well be a very good coach in the future. Right now, it doesn't feel like a step up. Otherwise, there have been talk about names like Hansi Flick, the German. But again, Barca are so limited financially. And also, people know, coaches know, prospective coaches know coming into Barca that there are limitations there in terms of squad building, in terms of what they can do in the transfer market, in terms of the club's financial situation. We know how tight it was last summer and the summer before that. We expect more of that this summer as well. Everyone knows that. Coaches know that. That is not necessarily an attractive situation to come into. Lots of other things about being Barcelona coach, of course, are incredibly attractive. It's still Barca. But that isn't necessarily how much of a stamp can you put on the team if you're limited in the transfer market. So all of that plays a part, I think. And right now, we don't know if, A, how much of an effort Laporta and the club are going to make to convince Xavi to stay, and B, how receptive Xavi is going to be to that. But certainly what we've seen and heard from Xavi over the last few weeks, he's been reluctant to talk about this. Constant questions. There were questions in the press conference last night after the game as well about his future. He hasn't wanted to talk about it. He's kept saying nothing has changed. Nothing has changed. Nothing has changed. Well, that will be tested. That will be tested now. And let's see. And it might be that for, like I say, lack of alternatives, finances. And Xavi, you know, although, of course, he made the decision to say he was stepping down, there was always that feeling that really, you know, he wants to be Barcelona manager. That's what he's always wanted. That's all he really wants. But it was just a lot of things he wasn't happy about, the support or lack of support from the club, rumours about replacing him. And of course, he wasn't happy with the form of the team and the way the team were playing. But fundamentally, this is a guy who wants to manage Barcelona if all the circumstances are right. So can these two parties come together and decide, no, yeah, we're going to change plans. I'm going to stay. Let's go again next year. Let's see if we can get right what went wrong this season and overhaul Real Madrid. So, of course, let's not forget, you know, just a year ago, they won the league. And this year, they're not that far off. The 11-point gap seems huge. Well, it's just those two Clásico wins. If Barca had won those two Clásicos, and they were the better team in the first Clásico, and they led in this second Clásico, then all of this would be turned on its head. Let's not forget that.
Alex, what's interesting is that he was such a broken man when he made that announcement. He just looked miserable, depressed. He said, you know, this, my life is a misery for me and my family. And then, obviously, everybody kind of took their foot off the gas when it came to the criticism around him, because they knew he was going to leave at the end of the season. So why even bother having to go at his tactics or his substitutions or how he approaches games? Because we know he's leaving. Surely, if he decides to stay, everything is ramped back up to full volume once again. And if he hated it the first time, why on earth would he tolerate it the second time?
Yeah, and then he announces that he's going again, and we go round and round and round in circles for another season. Yeah, I know. Look, the pressure at any top flight, at any big club, is intense. At Barcelona, even more so. And he was really unhappy and especially deeply hurt, I think, by a lot of the criticism from people that he thought would be on his side. You know, he thought a lot of the sort of the media environment around Barcelona would be with him because of who he is, because of his history. That hasn't always been the case. He also thought, I think, he'd have more support from the club, given who he is, given the player that he was, and given what he did last season. That wasn't the case either. You know, he had this briefing from within the club against him. So I think he was deeply, profoundly hurt by all of that, and made this decision, maybe a little bit of an emotional decision in the heat of the moment. And since then, has maybe been mulling it over and thinking, well, was that the right call? And thinking about sort of what life after this job that he'd been waiting for, looks like, and if that's something that he wants to kind of move into. So, yeah, it's true. You think it wouldn't take much to be back where they were, and would instantly the pressure be back on, and all of that speculation, all of that pressure, and would, like I say, a bit of a vicious circle. But I guess, you know, I guess in this situation, people like Xavi, fundamentally, they are optimists. They believe in their ability, and he would sort of back himself, I guess, to get back to where they were, like I say, last season when they were the best team in Spain.
Just a word on Real Madrid as well, Alex. Just give us a reaction around Jude Bellingham once again being the hero, of course, the man who's going to lead England to Euro success in the summer.
Yeah, absolutely incredible. The latest chapter in just a sensational season. Let's hope so, eh? Let's hope so. But no, he is absolutely... I mean, we know what an idol he is here. This, he's already an idol. He was an idol before this game. But the fact that he's done it, not just in one Clásico this season, but in two league Clásicos this season, scoring the winning goal in added time in both games. He's had a different, you know, second half of the season to the first half of the season. The first half of the season was all about the goals, wasn't it? The second half has been more about kind of hard work, and he's had some injury issues and suspensions. He talked about a bit of a change of his role in the team. He's had to sacrifice himself a little bit more for the team, and that has had an impact on his goal scoring numbers, and he's admitted that in the last couple of weeks. But still, he's there in the right place at the right time to score this goal. And yeah, it's as good a debut season for a Real Madrid player as anybody can remember, looking at some of the numbers there in terms of the figures and the players that he's being compared to in terms of his impact. We've had that right from the start of this season, haven't we? There have been comparisons with Cristiano Ronaldo, with Di Stefano in terms of that goal-scoring start. But no, it's been such a special season. And well, let's see if it gets even more special, because the league is pretty much in the bag. But let's see what happens in the Champions League as well, because that is the competition by which all Real Madrid teams and Real Madrid players are really judged.
Yeah, of course. If one man can score in the final, then, of course, it could be Jude Bellingham. Yeah. Alex, as always, thank you very much, mate. Much appreciated. Just a reminder, plenty more reaction from what we saw in El Clásico over on our YouTube channel. Be sure to go over there and subscribe.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com. Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
FA Cup semi-finals at Wembley. Can Coventry from the Championship make the final on May the 25th?
A sea of blue behind the goals. They are very much the underdogs against the mighty Manchester United. Teller low and hard into the area. McTominay, right place, right time, right finish. Maguire, right on the brink of half-time. The big head scores a big goal for Manchester United. Taken on by Fernandes. Start making plans for the FA Cup final.
It was a really, really difficult game. You start to lose the energy that you need, but if you can attack them and you can get enough of possession, enough quality possession, then you can really hurt them.
Tavares puts his power into it. Who knows? Coventry City dare to dream. O'Hare shooters the demand. My goodness me! What a twist of fate! This FA Cup semi-final comes alive. Hatchy right across the face of goal. They are asking for a penalty. They get it. They've won the jackpot. This is a script you could not write. The biggest kick of a ball of Hatchy Wright's life. Hatchy Wright does it! The United States international takes us into extra time in the most amazing FA Cup semi-final. We head into extra time. What a brilliant ball through. Golden points away. We like it. He gets it. Back of the net. Incredible! It's Tom! Manchester United out of the FA Cup. And Coventry City are going to have another day at Wembley.
Was right onside when the ball gets played to him. Oh, it's a tight one. We might have to hang on here.
No goal.
No goal. Just, oh, look at that. We're talking inches.
We enter the lottery of a penalty shootout. It's Casemiro. Oh, Collins, unorthodox, but keeps it out.
What a terrible start for Manchester United here.
Now, Patty Wright, the boy from LA, expresses himself. Advantage, Coventry.
He had a good game over here.
He did, didn't he? Sizes up the goalkeeper, but Onana gives Manchester United a very big chance with a big helping hand. Now the pressure is reversed, isn't it? United fans behind the goal trying to distract Sheaf, but he puts it into the Manchester United fans. Rasmus Højlund, can he put Manchester United into the FA Cup final? It's Højlund who lifts the tension and seals a topsy-turvy afternoon at Wembley Stadium. Ten Hag can hardly bring himself, Stuart, to celebrate.
Nor can the Manchester United players. Nobody ran towards Højlund.
It's not an embarrassment. It's, as I say, it's a huge achievement. A big team from United. From a decade ago, they only achieved the final three times. We now two times in 2 years. So that's a good performance.
Manchester United may win the game, but it's Coventry City who have won the hearts of many football supporters. So many twists, but Manchester United make it to the 2024 FA Cup final.
It really was a semi-final for the ages. Mario's still with us. We welcome in Mark Ogden as well. Mark, only Manchester United can win a game, but yet somehow lose at the same time.
Yeah, it was a humiliating victory, wasn't it? It was it was a strange afternoon. But, you know, they're in a cup final, but I don't think many Man United fans or anyone connected with the club goes into that cup final with any great hope that they can beat Man City. But they're there. I think you've got six games left in the Premier League this season. So all the question marks that were there before the game are probably even bigger now, but nothing has been answered yet. And I know what the big question is Erik ten Hag going to survive? And I don't think he is, but I think for the rest of the season, he probably will.
Is he right? Is anyone listening to him, Mark, when he says this is a big achievement, another cup final, two in a row for us at Manchester United?
Look, I know managers have to put a positive spin on bad results, but sometimes you've just got to say it as it is. And he is increasingly embarrassing with what he says after games and always trying to find a positive when there isn't really one there. I don't think anyone's listening to him. And I think it makes him look more ridiculous, the fact that he's trying to find these positives when ultimately it's time to come out and say that was a terrible performance. We were very lucky to get through. Some of these players aren't good enough to play for the club. You know, people have this kind of myth that Sir Alex Ferguson never criticised his players. And I remember after Manchester Derby when they lost at Main Road, he threatened to open the door and let the supporters in to tell the players exactly what he thought. So he wasn't shy of criticising his players. And I think sometimes you have to do that. And Ten Hag, for whatever reason, he's not done it. So,
well, isn't it self-preservation, though, Mark? He's looking after himself. He wants to try and sell himself still because he wants to keep this job.
But is it? I don't think that works. I don't think it just makes him look ridiculous. I think he's losing the support of the fans by saying these ridiculous things. I don't think anybody in the boardroom is convinced by it. I think some of the players are looking at him thinking, what on earth are you talking about? You know, what on earth are you doing putting Anthony on the pitch when we're 3-0 up and he's not tracking back and we're conceding three goals? He's saying so many crazy things that people have lost faith in him because of that. I think he needs to be honest now and say what needs to be said. I think he will get a bit more credibility. But self-preservation, I think the only way he can preserve himself is to get his team defending properly and winning properly. I mean, they didn't win on Sunday. They won on penalties. It was a draw against the Championship team. But he has to preserve himself by better performances, better results, and somehow finding a way to beat Man City in the cup final in a month's time.
Mario, we heard Harry Maguire after the game saying, we played like kids for the last 20 minutes. Just explain to me how you can have so much experience on the pitch and you can play with that sort of standard. Surely, with Manchester United, 11 internationals on the pitch, even when you're 3-1 down, you've got to come together to fight against a second-tier side, a fight that we just saw completely non-existent.
Yeah, but, you know, like, when it comes to games like this, then, you know, when you play the cup games in England, they always say to you, I mean, in the dressing room, I remember when I just got there, they always say, like, hey, let's start from the first minute to really surprise them and making sure that we really attack them. Okay, they play the first half, the second half, whoop, they go 3-0 up, you understand, and everything looks really comfortable. They go inside, they have the chat and everything. And then he makes a change. The change for me was very critical because I saw Rashford, and that's one of the guys that I, you know, when he's on form, we don't have to talk about how great he is. But when he is dropping off and picking the ball up, like almost at his left back, you know, like taking the ball from Bissaka, taking it on, and then, you know, he's not going forward. He's mostly focusing on trying to get on the ball and just waiting. And then he takes off Garnacho. That moment when he took off Garnacho, that's when the game changed. Because the energy was out of the team, and it was a player that that runs and opened things up for you. He was also upset by taking him off. And I think that is what gave them also the opportunity in the sense of Man U started to drop off. They have the same problem what I always said. This is not the first time I'm saying it. The same like Chelsea have. You got to finish games off. You're 3-0 up, this is finished. You got to sit then. You got to say, if you want to really close the game off, you got to have a better tactic in the sense of like, when they expose themselves at the back, you got to penalize them. And they did not do that. They waited, they kept on playing. And this is the biggest problem because then you hear him talk, Ten Hag, and exactly what you guys said, he is too positive. Positive, it's okay. But don't make yourself sound like people are not going to believe in you anymore. And I think this is the biggest thing. I think the dressing room, I'm not really, you know, that's not really the biggest yet. But when I was at the stadium, at the Chelsea stadium, and I was sitting next to a Manchester journalist, he sat next to me and he told me the same thing we just talked about. He said, like, the crucial now, he is almost putting himself in the window and hoping to hold on to his job. And that's never a good sign.
We're just seeing here the pictures. This is at the period between the regular 90 minutes and extra time. Mm. He looks a bit lost, Shaq.
Let me see. Couple of things. I'll start with the positives for Manchester United. They're in the final.
That shouldn't take long.
Yeah, right, there we are.
They're in the final.
Move on.
They have a puncher's chance of beating Manchester City. I don't see it from where we sit, but they have a puncher's chance. They're in the final. The big complaint about Manchester United all season long, as was with this game, is that this is a team desperately lacking in character, in leadership, in fight, in resilience, however you want to package it. And you've seen that play out all season long. And that has fallen at the feet of the players for most of this season. Now, as far as Ten Hag and his post-game press conferences, I think he's still auditioning to steal. That shot right there, if I'm Sir Jim Ratcliffe, if I'm involved in Manchester United in any way, is exactly why I do not care what happens in the final. Ten Hag has to go. Now, I'm a firm believer that a team takes on the personality of its manager. And again, we've sat here all season long and said, no fight, no leadership, no resilience. You've just seen your team throw away a 3-goal lead. This is your job now. This is your time. This is the time you have the greatest impact on your team. And you look as lost as anybody in Wembley. And that for me, right there. Now, I don't care what happens in a month's time. He cannot be Manchester United manager to start next season and hope for anything other than a team that looks just as lost as we saw him there.
Are we reading too much into this?
No. The house is on fire, right? And you're standing watching it go up in flame. Who does that? You only do that when you're helpless. And he looked absolutely helpless. Mm. And I thought it was interesting we were talking about Ten Hag not digging people out. I think he's in a position now. Generally, when you're coaching and you go and dig somebody out, you're doing it for a reason. And the reason you're doing it is because you know they can do better.
Right.
You know they've got more in there. And that's the...
You're trying to get a reaction.
It's the last resort to try and get a reaction from them. But he's looking around that team and he's like, I'm wasting my time digging anybody out because I'm not getting a reaction from anybody. And the last thing, what Mario said, you're relying on a teenager who's learning his trade in order to get you through, to get you over the line in the semi-final of an FA Cup in Garnacho. When Garnacho goes off, it affects the team that badly. That's how bad this team is. When a teenager who's learning his trade is probably as big a reason as any why they lost the game.
Why is he taking him off? Is he scared to take someone like Rashford off? Is it easier to take someone like Garnacho off?
He's ticking him off because he doesn't understand what I've just said.
Wow.
If he understood the importance of Garnacho, it's bad enough Rashford went off, because when Rashford is on form, he does, he drops off and he runs at people. And Garnacho does it on both sides. So no wonder that they were all over Coventry, because they've got two guys who, they're so positive when they get it, they want to run at people. And, of course, you lose Rashford, and then you decide to take the other one off that's actually getting you out. You get... As soon as he went off, all they did was they got pushed back.
Yep.
And then either good play or the deflection or whatever, and you're back in the mire. So he doesn't see it. And that's, again, that's another reason why he shouldn't be in the job.
But Mario, he hasn't just been dragged off the street. It's not me in charge of Manchester United. You know, he had a lot of success at Ajax. How can you explain that? And I know it's a step up and I know it's a different level. However, you see him completely lost in that period. He knows. He knows football. He knows what he has to do, surely.
Yeah, but that's the same what I said. You know, before, last week we talked about it, I said moving to Ajax was a big step for him. But going to Manchester United, I think sometimes in my country, for the guys that we have, you know, we have the iconical players that have been abroad and done great things. I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about people that sometimes go abroad, have to understand where you're going. Going to Man United, I can guarantee you he's now thinking, this club is big. It's huge, you know, it's not, look, at Ajax it's okay, you know, like, don't get me wrong, it's a big club in Holland, you understand, and we have some history, yes, I'm not wiping that away, but when you come to Man U, it's another level, and in the level I mean, like, every week, whatever newspaper or whatever TV you put on, they're talking about this club, and they're talking about him. And everything is putting under, you know, is highlighted. What are you doing? When do you take players off? What are you doing after you 3-0 up? What do you do? You're playing, okay, for example, he plays Casemiro at the back. He's fortunate that Coventry didn't penalize that situation, because they should have gone harder at him, because he's not a player that normally plays that position. So things like this, all the little things are coming out, and he has to be careful, because like Xhaka said, he's in the shopping window trying to sell himself as good as he can. But the face side of Mr. Radcliffe doesn't give me a feeling that he's enjoying what he's watching.
So then what happens next? Because you've told us numerous occasions, Oggy, that Manchester United don't have the finances necessarily to get rid of Ten Hag and all of his team and then bring in another top-notch manager. So how is this all going to play out?
Well, I mean, the financial side of it, that has to go out of the window, because if the guy's not good enough, he's not good enough. I mean, you don't keep a guy on because it's going to cost you £10 million to keep him. It just doesn't make sense, because next season you have the same problem, United will be even worse. So they're going to have to bite the bullet and get rid of him and find a way to replace him. But the problem that United have got right now, I mean, I was chatting to Craig yesterday, and Craig was right. You would get rid of Ten Hag now to have a better chance of winning the cup final, but who do you bring in for six games and a cup final?
Right.
There's nobody out there. There's nobody at the club, even within the club, to come in as a caretaker manager. So you get to the summer, and the problem is, as Liverpool are finding, as Bayern Munich are finding, a lot of big clubs want managers right now, but there's no obvious superstar coach out there. You know, Nagelsmann's staying with Germany. You've had, you know, Tuchel's on the market, but I'm not quite sure he suits what United wants to do. So there's no obvious candidate for Man United. I mean, you know, we spoke about Gareth Southgate. I mean, for all his faults, a Gareth Southgate team wouldn't play like Man United are playing recently, but it probably wouldn't win anything. So the people at United are looking around thinking, well, Dan Ashworth hasn't arrived yet. We don't know who's making the choice for the new coach. If Dave Brailsford was in charge of that, which he is at the moment, he's a cycling guy. He doesn't know football. So the people at the club that would be charged with making the decision to bring in a replacement don't know what they're looking for. So, but that won't save Ten Hag. Ten Hag has put himself out of a job, or he will do soon, because his team is just not good enough. I mean, I was at the Ajax Tottenham semi-final 5 years ago now, and exactly the same thing happened then. His Ajax team had a two-goal lead in the semi-final and blew it at home to Tottenham and lost to the last kick of the game. 5 years on, it's happening every week at Man United. He doesn't learn. He can't seem to have take the lessons on board. And, you know, a Man United might just be bigger than that. And Mario's right. He's gone from the biggest team in the Netherlands that bully opposition and get their own way more often than not, to the biggest team in England. But they can't do that, because there's too many other big teams in England. So he's just out of his depth. And no matter what it costs to get rid of him, it'll cost even more to keep him, because the long term of keeping Erik ten Hag at Man United will be more expensive, because there'll be more mistakes, more bad signings, more players underperforming because he's not a good enough coach. So they have to get rid of him. It's just a case of when, but the problem then is, who do they bring in? Because there's no obvious solution.
What about someone who's won everything, knows Manchester well, is free at the moment? Jose Mourinho. Mark, he could be back.
What do you mean, like for the rest of the season, or as a permanent coach for the next year and the year after?
You could come in tomorrow, take over for 6 games, lead them to FA Cup victory, and there we are, a new chapter in the life of Manchester United.
And bring light and harmony to the club and make it a happy place again like the last time. Look, Jose Mourinho's last three or four jobs, his last three jobs have been a failure. And every time the fails got, he's picked up fewer points at Roma than he did at Tottenham.
So Mourinho's off there. We need a name, though, Mark. We need someone. We need someone. Not Stevie. Who?
That is the problem. And that's the problem that Ineos have got right now. Because if Erik ten Hag was to go this week, if they lose to Sheffield United on Wednesday and his position comes untenable and they're mathematically out of Champions League running, which they're already out of, then he goes, Steve McLaren goes with him, Mitchell van der Gaag goes with him, his coaches. Then you've got nobody there. They're not going to give the job to Darren Fletcher.
Wayne Rooney, Rooney, and he's available, isn't he?
Solskjaer.
Wayne Rooney, get all the club. Everyone, every ex-Manchester United player coming as a big team.
Well, this is what it amounts to. I mean, Julian Lopetegui's available. Let's be serious. Julian Lopetegui's available right now. But would he want to come in for 6 games? And I mean, he probably would, to take the chance of 6 games with Man United, maybe win the FA Cup. But then would you have to kind of say to him, look, come in and we'll give you the job next season? United don't want to do that. But in terms of good quality coaches that are available, Lopetegui's available. So I think he'd be a much better option than Erik ten Hag, even for the sake of a month. But are they going to do that? Who knows? But it's getting to the point now where one more defeat for ten Hag, that will be it, because they've got Sheffield United and Burnley at home this week. They have to get 6 points, but I'm sitting here now thinking they'll be lucky to get 3. So let's wait and see.
Let's indeed.
Who did Liverpool do?
What did Liverpool do?
They brought Kenny Dalglish in. Why don't they bring Fergie in? He sat up in the stand.
Oh, I know.
6 games.
Well, there we are.
That's 6 games. Why not?
There we go. Yeah. All right. OK. Let's take a look at how things stand in the Premier League.
Yes, doing well, yeah.
Manchester United, of course, sitting 7th in the table. Chelsea, meanwhile, sitting 9th. We've got an FA Cup bracket. That's where I was going with this. Manchester United, of course, will face Manchester City in the final, which will take place next month. So much football's happened over this week. I completely forgot about Chelsea being rubbish. But let's talk about it a little bit, Mario. As a former Chelsea player, this was really bad from Pochettino, because if you ever had the opportunity to beat Manchester City, this was it, because City were terrible. It was one of the worst performances you've seen from City under Pep. Yet even then, Chelsea couldn't get it done. Nico Jackson caused all the fuss about the penalty in that game against Everton. Had the chance then to show, look, I am the real man, I am the striker. Fluffed his lines very much so on more than one occasion, Mario. What did you make of it all?
Yeah, no, definitely. Like this opportunity also, he cuts back. He doesn't believe to strike the ball with his left foot because he goes too wide. And there were moments, you understand, and in this moment, look, I always say this, look, when you are a big club like Chelsea is, and you bring in, regardless of the talents that you brought in are young, you still have to understand that competition is very vital. Now, and Koku is one of the players that maybe the injury, caused the trouble that he couldn't compete with him. But he clearly needs some competition, because you cannot... I know he has a lot of pressure on him, but that is what he before he signed his deal, he knew that he was coming here, and that he knew that he was coming in a club where pressure was going to be mounting on me, and you got to finish this off. You get 3 great opportunities. You got to at least, finish off one of them just to create something in the game. Manchester City, they were disappointed. They were hurt. They were physically, you understand, you heard Pep talking about the game that he said, I couldn't believe this game was being played, because that means that physically they were really, under the radar, because against Real Madrid, the way Madrid plays, you understand, they played them on the counterattack, set back, and way to penalize them. So City had to put a lot of energy in that game. So now you're facing them in the, oh my God, this was the moment for Chelsea. Everything was there for them to take it. And I don't want to point a finger too hard to Pochettino, because I think he put the team out that I think was good enough, you understand, to compete with City. Not saying that they were better than City, because clearly we saw, you understand, even a tired City, you understand, can beat a Chelsea team. But I'm just saying, like, they had everything on that field to compete with them and making sure you could bring the win home. They had a, okay, City had some opportunities, the Foden one, you understand, the way, you know, De Bruyne put him in, only De Bruyne can do that because that ball was incredible, the way he slid the defense right open. But still, I felt like they should have done way more, Chelsea, in finding, playing this game like a final, not like a semi-final. They should have played like a final, and they did not do that.
Chelsea, of course, are in action against Arsenal. That's on Tuesday. Quick turnaround then for both of those sides, and we will, of course, be discussing that on the next edition of the show. Be sure to join us. And the cup final will be on May the 25th. We'll be live from Wembley. Manchester City taking on Manchester United. Of course, that live and exclusive on ESPN+. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Oh, things have gone mad. This is what Nottingham Forest tweeted out after that defeat against Everton. Three extremely poor decisions, three penalties not given, which we simply cannot accept. We warned the PGMOL that the VAR is a Luton fan before the game, but they didn't change him. Our patience has been tested multiple times. NFFC will now consider its options. Now, Mark Clattenburg, friend of the show, is, of course, employed by Nottingham Forest as a referee consultant. In his column in the Daily Mail newspaper, he wrote this: "Certainly, I would not have risked this situation. If I were the head of the referees, and all of this could have been avoided, had the PGMOL simply made smarter appointments. Referees do not make mistakes deliberately, but it was mind-boggling to watch. Why Atwell did not send Taylor to his screen, only he will know." Just a reminder, Mark Clattenburg, former referee, is an employee of Nottingham Forest. Doesn't mention that. Right. Oggie, should there be definitive rules? Because it seems a bit of a grey area. Like, if referees have affiliation with a team or is known to a supporter team in the past, then they maybe will look to avoid him officiating game. But there doesn't seem to be anything solid, anything written to say, right, if you're a Luton Town fan and you've supported in the past, we're not going to have you on this game.
Yeah, I mean, look, there are rules in terms that the referees have to make clear who their affiliations are with. But I think we know Michael Oliver's a Newcastle fan. I've actually seen him at St James's Park with a Newcastle top on, so that's clear. He doesn't referee Newcastle games, and I guess if Sunderland were in the Premier League, he wouldn't referee their games as well. But how far down the line do you go? So Stuart Atwell, if he is a Luton fan, well, this game between Everton and Forest, yes, it did involve rivals for Luton's place in the Premier League, but ultimately, Everton winning didn't help Luton at all. For Luton's sake, it would probably be better if it was a draw. So I'm not quite sure that the suggestion that him being there helped Luton's case. But, you know, ultimately, the guys have all played. They were football fans before they started playing. They had the club to support. But once they start playing, the professionals, their loyalty is to the people that employ them. And I think referees in England certainly are of that same kind of ilk. They're professionals. And they're not going to go into a game thinking, how can I help my team today? But I'd be amazed if that was the case. So you know, how far down the line do PGML go with this? Yes, if Stuart Atwell's a Luton fan, don't let him referee Luton games, but, you know, he'd be sitting at half the Premier League if he couldn't referee a game that involved Luton, because, you know, there's about five or six teams in the bottom half of the table that are in relegation trouble. So I just think it's a ridiculous scenario that Forrest are putting out there. So I was happy with the officials. I mean, they made some big mistakes, but I wouldn't change the officials because of who they supposedly supported as a kid.
What are Forrest ringing them up last week, Shaka, and saying we want this VAR changed?
Listen, I find Forrest's position, or certainly the statement, a really odd one. And listen, I get it. You feel that you have three stonewall penalties. Me personally, I thought two were definite, one half and half. But I don't think, in much like Laporta's statement, this is about a fan base. That being said, I feel there are far better ways that Nottingham Forest could have gone about this. Now, were I in the Nottingham Forest board and having any kind of say on this decision, while I'm aggrieved at it, while I feel that there's something needs to be answered to, I do that quietly. I go to the PGMOL, I go to the Premier League, I go to whoever I need to, quietly behind the scenes, and at the same time, I say to my good mate, Steve Nicol, who's a Nottingham Forest fan influencer, and say to him, this is what I'm doing, you put it out there. So it doesn't come through official channels. But again, the fan base knows, the public knows what's happening and how you're fighting behind the scenes. And you give that yourself...
They would argue that they did do that. They quietly went to the PGMOL last week and said, look...
Right, yeah, they quietly did, but then they put it out on their official channels. That for me, is where you kind of draw the line. Because you have to... Mm-hmm. As a football club, you have to recognise or certainly uphold the integrity of the game. Even when you feel it's going against you. And I think Nottingham Forest did that aspect of it an injustice by putting it out on their official social media platforms.
It's all quite unsavoury, isn't it, Stevie?
Yeah.
I can't help thinking about the points deduction, to be honest. It was the first thing I thought about. How about the responsibility, if you go down, is on you for getting yourself 4 points taken away?
Right.
How about you try and blame yourself and look in the mirror and say, well, listen, OK, these results or these decisions went against us, but you know what? We'd be sitting, what, 5-6 points ahead of Luton now, hadn't got points deducted because of what we did. All they try to do is try and put the blame on somebody else when they need to take a look in the mirror and look at themselves. And I absolutely loved Augie's point. We as footballers, you don't... There's not a bigger Liverpool supporter than me. But I tell you what, when I was with Sheffield Wednesday, if I was in the six-yard box at the cop end, I would have rammed the ball into the back of the net without thinking twice about it. So I love that, Augie. That was perfect.
Mario, this is dangerous, isn't it? Because this is kind of pub talk, arguments between fans that seems to escalate to something more and something dangerous if you're an official.
Yeah, because, you know, like the situation, you know, the two words that I really stumbled on was corruption and integrity. I think that's you know, I think Shaka said it also. When you do, you know, like when you do your job, right? We are not sitting here and not doing our job and thinking like, for example, I'm a Chelsea fan and I'm not going to be critical to them or whatever. No, it doesn't work like that. You're going to see what you see. And Atwell is maybe a Luton fan or he's not, it doesn't matter. But the question for me comes now, you have a referee there, Mark Clattenburg. He knows that he does not like, you understand, whatever the situation was. Why don't you highlight it before the game? Yeah, we said it. No, you didn't put your force behind it. Because if you said it, put force behind it if you really have a problem with it. And a couple of the incidents that happened, you understand, like this one, you understand, I ask myself the only thing, and this has nothing to do with, you know, let's scratch the Luton situation because I think that's really, I'm just talking about the person, his job. This moment, you call the ref and say, go and look. And also, you understand, you have a ref that has enough experience. Anthony Taylor has enough experience in understanding what he needs to do. If you don't see that, you know, one of the three occasions that I saw, he could at least, you understand, think about it. But sometimes, I'm telling you, Dan, I'll be honest, I've been on the pitch sometimes, and referees, oh my God, sometimes, whoo, my friend, it is because I played football, but sometimes I would love to tackle a ref.
I think that's a general consensus from the footballers we've had on. Mark, you've got to hope this doesn't start like a precedent of things, because it's tiresome and boring already.
Well, we've had a few this season, haven't we? We've had a few clubs that have moaned about decisions to the Premier League and you know, saying it's not right and complaining about it. And it has kind of grown a little bit. Forest aren't the first team to do it. And Forest have done it before as well. They were saying they were going to compile a dossier and send it to the Premier League last season. So they've just got to stop whinging, because, you know, I was watching that game and Morgan Gibbs-White missed an absolute sitter in the second half. So are they not blaming him for missing a chance? Mm. Everybody makes mistakes. And I think referees make mistakes, and especially at this stage of the season when stakes are so high, they get exacerbated. But, you know, players make mistakes, goalkeepers make mistakes, and everybody has to accept that nobody's infallible. And the referees, yes, they're there for criticism, but look at the players as well. Look at the managers for picking their own team, picking their own tactics. It's just an easy deflection tactic. And I think, I don't know what the Premier League can do or the FA can do. It'll probably be a fine if anything else. It won't be a points deduction, but Forest should really suffer for this, because it's just a horrible thing to say and just to suggest that somebody may have made a decision against their team because they supported Luton as a kid. It's just ridiculous.
Marco, thank you very much. We'll let you go. Mario will be back with us for extra time. As always, you can check that out over on our YouTube channel where we answer your questions.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
We all know breakfast is an important part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any. You know what happens? You grab a cup of coffee and skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, and waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
That's it. Brings us to the end of today's show. Mario is joining us again for extra time, which is next. Welcome in then to the latest edition of Extra Time. Mario is with us, as is Stevie and Shaka. Shaka, you're away, of course, on the weekend.
Yes, yes.
Send you down in Florida for a wedding.
That's right.
You mentioned the story that you were Manchester United 3-0 up. You went for breakfast.
Yes.
And you had Eggs Benedict.
Yes.
Because you thought, oh, yeah, I can have that. Stevie's face when you said Eggs Benedict.
It was gorgeous. Oh, I love an Eggs Benedict.
Are you not a fan, Stevie?
What's wrong with sausages and eggs?
Why would you try anything
hash browns.
Different?
Hash browns.
Well, okay, so Eggs Benedict
beans,
with a bit
beans,
of salmon.
Stevie, some beans.
Salmon. Some beans, yeah, exactly.
Beautiful.
Yeah, what did you make of an English breakfast, Mario? As someone who looks after themselves pretty well, what did you make of that when you went to England?
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, no. I had to get used to those beans with eggs. It was, like, really interesting for me to think, like, how could you guys eat it together? And now, and you know what was my really take? I love the hash browns. The hash browns, I got addicted to it. I'm sorry. That's so good. Oh, my God. Hash browns. Oh. And what the other thing from breakfast, your roast dinner, hallelujah. I love it.
Yes. Yeah, Yorkshire puddings, the whole shebang. Yep. Oh, beautiful. There we go. Right. Would Stevie like Tuchel at Liverpool?
No.
Who would you like?
Alonso.
It's a little bit.
Yeah, that's true.
Jurgen Klopp.
That's a tough one. I mean, Oggy was talking about it. If you're Man United, who do you get?
Right.
I mean, does everybody play the type of football that Liverpool players are used to?
Yeah.
So, I mean, right now, I'm kind of thinking, does everybody?
De Zerbi?
Without going overboard, De Zerbi.
Without going overboard?
Yeah.
Right, really, that's exciting. Don't be his agent. Shaka, who is the goalkeeper of the season so far? Along all the best leagues and all competitions.
Oh. Wow.
Wow, that is a good question.
Lemonet.
Wow.
I don't know, you know. Give us some thought, Dan.
Well, okay. Do you want to give us some contenders?
Yeah, come back to me at the end of extra time.
Okay, right. All right, Shank. Let's hope that isn't for every question.
Yes, there are.
Rank in order of most to least likely. Leverkusen going unbeaten. City finishing the season titleless. United winning the FA Cup. Xavi returning to Barca. Mbappe spurning Real Madrid again. Wow.
Wait, what is that?
Least likely.
So, most likely to least likely.
Right.
All of those, of course.
Can't see that far.
Okay, well...
Most likely, Leverkusen.
Most likely Leverkusen, you think, to go unbeaten this season. Of course, drew against Borussia Dortmund late on, didn't they, at the weekend.
Can't see City not winning something.
City will win something?
Aye.
Okay, be it the FA Cup or the Premier League?
Yeah, well, they're in pole possession on both.
Okay, all right. So we've got those. So they're the least likely, Leverkusen.
It's got to be Mbappe, Spurman.
Yeah, I think Mbappe...
I think it's
pretty much done, isn't it? OK. So what's more likely then? Yeah. United winning the FA Cup, Mario, or Xavi returning to Barcelona?
United winning the FA Cup? Yes. No. United. No. Oh, my God. I was thinking about City when I said United. Okay. Oh, my God. United winning it or Xavi going back to Barcelona? What's most like? Oh, my God. You ask. This is crazy. How could I? These are two questions that I almost like had to be at the bottom. Then I go for Xavi going back.
Xavi
I think
back?
Xavi then stays on. I have to gamble. Yeah, I have to gamble on that.
Okay,
one.
Xavi all right. So the least likely thing is United win the FA Cup. Is that where we're at?
That's
where we finished up. Stevie, who do you think is the best replacement for Salah next season? Who would you have in? Good question.
Hi. I would be more tempted to go for somebody like Osimhen and use the other ones wide.
So Nunez is a wide player?
Yep.
Can he do that?
I think so, yeah, because he looks as though he enjoys running at people and he likes running in behind. So, yeah. Put him wide.
Nunez wide.
Diaz on the other side.
Osimhen through the centre.
Yeah, and you can have Jota in any of the three spots.
OK. All right. That's a nice little solution, isn't it? Yeah. That's lovely. Would you prefer that or Salah to stay?
I think if the Saudis come in with 150 mil, I think you'd take it.
I don't think they will anymore, though, will they?
I think they will.
Do you think they will, Mario? You reckon?
Well, I think they will.
We'll find out.
Because I heard already, when I heard before about that side, they really like Salah. Eh? And Salah is not only just a player that they looked at, but this is also like him, the way he's been idolized. It's a level that maybe we don't really understand yet, but at Liverpool, it definitely is, because, you know, we don't have to understand that. But I'm just saying, like, on a global sense towards the Saudis, yeah. I think they still look at him and think, like, wow. So they will put the money down.
For Xhaka, OK, get ready. Mm. Let's say Champions League second leg semi-final, Real Madrid against Bayern Munich. Courtois is healthy, but hasn't played a minute of football.
Ooh.
Would you start him over Lunin?
Ooh. If he's played in reserves, yes.
Yeah? Yeah, you'd have him?
Oh, well, you just said he hadn't played a minute of football. Yeah.
Well, first team football. It'll roll off the injury bench.
He loves changing the rules.
We've had a nice day. We haven't had a fight today.
Oh, no.
I haven't laughed about you not being able to print your stuff and Shaq getting dragged into it all.
Me, Shaq is not being able to print it either.
What would you do as a coach?
If he hadn't played any football, no.
No football, no chance.
Yes.
No. Yeah.
I agree.
No. Mario, you agree?
I agree, 100%. No football, then I got to keep Lunin in and keep him playing.
But he's just a goalkeeper, isn't he? What do you need football for?
I don't know.
It does not work like that, football. It does not work like that. The goalkeepers bring security behind you. Yes, Saka. You bring safety behind you. Let me explain to you. Look, when we are playing on the field, we want safety behind us. It's like driving a car, right? You don't want a lunatic behind you. And that's why I don't understand people. If you drive behind a truck or a bus, you are crazy. Don't drive behind a truck or a bus. Move away from the bus and the truck and drive behind a car. So you got a vision clearly
in front of
you.
What if I've only got one lane? I've got no options. Lunatic's rubbish. He keeps dropping the ball.
Wait.
He's
not rubbish.
Oh, Shaka, they've exploited him a lot.
Don't go too close.
Hey, that Christensen goal.
Oh, he made a mistake.
But they know it now. Every corner's whipped in right on top of his head.
Easy to fix.
Well, go on then. What's the fix?
Go on, what's the fix?
Get Courtois in.
Roll him off.
Get him in there.
Roll him off the injury.
Go on. That's all.
He'd be all right.
Yeah?
He'd be all right.
All right, then. Here we go. Last question. Mario, a compliment often thrown at Klopp is that he is a coach that players would die for. Did you have a manager that you felt the same way about?
Yes. Because my manager, you understand, when he gave me my debut, Louis van Gaal, man, the way he treated me, when I would come home from the Champions League games, instead of me calling my friend to pick me up, van Gaal would drive me home at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, all the way to my house, and drop me off. And I sometimes was like, wow. I was quiet in the whole journey because I didn't want to talk because your coach is sitting next to you. And then sometimes he would pump a question and go, how do you think the game was? Oh my God, listen, if you want to get the player nervous, get him nervous when you're sitting with your coach in the car and you're just like this. Okay, coach, now I felt like, he said, no, you can talk, it's okay. Let me hear what you think. Oh my God, my God. But away from that, he was my guy. Gave me my debut for Holland and for Ajax. I did everything.
Mario, were you a bit of a teacher's pet? Like, how did your teammates deal with that situation? Of, you know, the manager driving you around and looking after you in that sense?
No, because all the guys had a car. I wanted to have a car too. So the players were looking at me like, listen, listen, I would rather be a player with a car. But in that situation, I was a kid that was going to school. So if the coach then looks out for me, then, I mean, you might as well take it, right? Why not?
Yeah, most definitely. That's
what I want to know is, did Van Gaal drive behind any buses?
Well, yes, so no trucks, no buses.
That's really cool.
That's what I want to know.
What about you, Shaq? What about you?
Probably Bertil Sinclair, who brought me in junior national teams, gave me my national team debut.
Right.
After that, Harry Redknapp.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's about it.
Oh, perfect. Stephen?
Yeah. Dalglish.
Kenny Dalglish?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if you stepped out of line or he thought you were dropping your level or he would be on you like a ton of bricks. But I tell you what, he would go to bat for you. And on the pitch or off the pitch.
Thank you very much.
Hey, I have to answer my question.
Steve, you got very serious then. Oh, yeah. Best goalkeeper in Europe this season.
I'm going to go Manuel Neuer.
Man, has he been injured?
From the time Manuel Neuer flicked that ball up to himself and then played it over the top for Bayern to go on and score against
Chat,
us.
You've really let yourself down.
No.
Manuel Neuer. You can't.
Then,
you may as well think Thibaut Courtois.
And then second, Emi Martinez to Manuel Neuer. That's what I'm going for.
To be fair,
we could have just finished the segment. Now you've made a fool of yourself.
You didn't have a lot of choices.
Manuel Neuer.
Manuel, absolutely.
He went skiing, broke his leg, and didn't play.
That was last year.
No,
that was no.
He has hardly played this season.
Oh, and he's been better than everybody else.
Oh, really?
That's all it's because
he had a rest.
Well, it's his fault.
It's his fault.
You know, I appreciate the rest as good.
Yeah, Manuel Neuer, president.
German Winter Olympics team this year, isn't he?
That's it. Thank you very much to Mario, to Shaq. Are you here tomorrow, Shaq?
Yes, I am.
2 days in a row.
I'm going to Florida. I'm going home for a rest, no?
Oh, yes. Enjoy it.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They're the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.